Coming up, Matis Yahu, the Hasidic Jewish reggae superstar. And Blue Christmas, services for people, often those in mourning, for whom the holidays are especially painful.
It's personal, and it's private, and it's very pronounced.
Plus, going into the wilderness to experience the presence of God.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. President Obama this week accepted the Nobel Prize for Peace. The president acknowledged the paradox of accepting the Peace Prize while America is waging two wars, but he said the cause is just.
Negotiations cannot convince Al-Qaeda's leaders to lay down their arms. To say that force may sometimes be necessary is not a call to cynicism, it is a recognition of history, the imperfections of man, and the limits of reason.
At the same time, Obama spoke of the global responsibility to strive for peace.
The nonviolence practiced by men like Gandhi and King may not have been practical or possible in every circumstance, but the love that they preached, their fundamental faith in human progress, that must always be the North Star that guides us on our journey. Let us reach for the world that ought to be, that spark of the divine that still steers within each of our souls.
In Copenhagen, world leaders gathered for the Global Climate Summit. Religious leaders urged officials to think of environmental stewardship as a moral responsibility. The Dalai Lama and Pope Benedict XVI were among those asking members to make climate change a high priority. In Washington, as the Senate continues to debate health care reform, abortion remains a major point of contention. Senators rejected an amendment to restrict funding for abortions, but the leadership agreed to keep working on a compromise to try to satisfy both opponents and supporters of abortion rights. Meanwhile, the Roman Catholic bishops said they will oppose the bill if it allows any funding for abortion coverage. The U.S. Supreme Court will decide if a California law school violated the constitutional rights of a national Christian student group that excludes gays and lesbians from leadership. The University of California's Hastings College of the Law said it would not officially recognize the Christian Legal Society because the group violates campus anti-discrimination policies. But the CLS says it has a religious right to restrict its voting members and officers to those who share the group's beliefs. The High Court will hear the case in March. New controversy across the Anglican Communion after the Episcopal Diocese of Los Angeles elected Reverend Mary Glasspool, a lesbian, as assistant bishop. If her election is confirmed by a majority of Episcopal dioceses over the next few weeks, she would become the second openly gay bishop in the denomination. After the election of the first gay bishop in 2003, leaders of the 77-million-member Anglican Communion asked the Episcopal Church not to ordain any others. But in July, representatives at the Episcopal General Convention overwhelmingly affirmed that gays and lesbians are eligible to become bishops. An international Anglican panel is now urging Episcopalians not to confirm Glasspool's election as an exercise of, quote, gracious restraint. In Pakistan, the arrests of five American Muslims suspected of links to terrorism were triggered by information from Muslims in this country. The Council on American-Islamic Relations was instrumental in alerting authorities to the suspected terrorists, all from the Washington, D.C. area. CARE had encouraged the men's families to contact the FBI after the men had unexpectedly left their homes last month and left behind a disturbing videotape. CARE said the video showed a, quote, profound misunderstanding of the Quran. Now, a special report. Most people associate reggae music with the rhythmic style developed in Jamaica in the late 1960s, but an American reggae superstar, who's also an observant Orthodox Jew, is challenging popular perceptions. He is the Grammy-nominated singer Mattis Yahu. An energetic presence on stage, Mattis Yahu is soft-spoken in person and doesn't do a lot of television interviews. But he talked with Kim Lawton about his spiritual journey and how his faith infuses his music.
This is not something you might expect at the historic Six and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C., a full-out reggae jam session. But Mattis Yahu, the Hasidic Jewish musician, is anything but expected. Matthew Miller, better known by his Hebrew stage name Mattis Yahu, burst onto the music scene in 2004 as something of a novelty. An observant Orthodox Jew who sang reggae songs about his faith. But now, with a Grammy nomination and two gold albums, Mattis Yahu has earned critical acclaim as well. He says his music is a reflection of his spirituality.
My life is not separate from my music. You know, it's not like a day job that I leave and go home. It's who I am as a person and how I am trying to grow, come closer to God, be a better person.
The 30-year-old Mattis Yahu's spiritual journey has evolved dramatically. He was raised in New York in a largely secular Jewish family. He says his first real interaction with spirituality came through the music of Jamaican reggae legend Bob Marley.
Hearing all the references, you know, to the Old Testament, to Judaism, in the context of reggae music. Why is Bob Marley singing, taking all these quotes from the Psalms, you know? And I know that I'm Jewish. I know I have some kind of connection with that, Psalms and the Old Testament. And it made me intrigued to start to get interested in my heritage.
He went on a study trip to Israel when he was in high school, which further piqued his interest in his Jewish heritage.
You grew up with one strain of Judaism, and then you see all around you, like, you know, so many different types of Jews relating to Judaism in different ways, but Judaism is at the core of it all.
But he was also interested in rock music and the drugs that can go with that scene. He says from the time he was 16 until he was 22, he pursued what he considered the transcendent, almost spiritual experience of being high.
I got to a certain point, I think, where I felt very stuck and very, like, unable to get to that place, you know, to get back to that experience. And I knew that it had to be done without any crutch or any substances and drugs or anything like that. I really felt that the way to do it was to, like, really delve into this my spiritual tradition.
He discovered Shlomo Carlbach, the so-called singing rabbi who incorporated music with Orthodox Jewish beliefs. And he got involved with the Hasidic Chabad Lubavitch movement. Not only got involved, he says, but jumped into it full force.
I got really excited about being Jewish, you know. I started wearing a yarmulke, and I loved, like, all of a sudden the fact that I had this identity.
Mattis Yahu moved to Crown Heights, Brooklyn, where the Chabad Lubavitch movement is headquartered. And he entered a yeshiva, where he spent his weekdays in intensive study of the Torah. He says he was inspired by the beauty he found in the text.
All of my creativity was kind of like festering and bubbling. And then on Friday I would go and then I would just basically take one of those lines or one of those ideas and try to develop a song around it with a vision.
Mattis Yahu began performing those songs and became a sensation, the reggae singer with the Orthodox black hat and coat. The religious themes in his lyrics were numerous and overt. His top 40 hit, King Without a Crown, incorporates Chabad's belief that the coming of the Messiah, Mashiach, is near. The song's chorus is explicit. I want Mashiach now. While his music career was taking off, he says he felt increasingly restricted by some of the Chabad beliefs and lifestyle. Matityahu eventually left Chabad, although he still identifies himself as Hasidic. He says he values much from his time with the movement.
It was an interesting experience for me because in some ways it was there was a lot of light. It was very purifying. I really was able to get past a lot of the things that I hadn't been able to get past before.
But he says it was also a dark experience for him.
The line of where you draw when you're trying to kind of lose yourself as to where it's healthy and where it's you start to become schizophrenic, you know, or totally lose your mind almost, you know. And I was really walking that line.
He says a Jewish therapist who became a mentor, friend, and co-writer helped him start to rethink everything he had taken as ultimate truth.
I began to reevaluate all the decisions I had made and to re-emerge, to kind of bring myself back into the picture and make decisions for myself based on what seemed right and what was wrong.
He says his spirituality today is focused not on finding the right answers, but rather on figuring out the right questions. He compares his faith to a romantic relationship.
God, love-hate relationship, you know. You've been through something with somebody, and you have difficulties and problems, and you don't understand each other. You try to work through it. That's more what my relationship with Judaism developed into versus the first was total blind devotion, just falling in love with it.
Matityahu no longer performs in the hat and coat of Chabad, but he still wears his yarmulke and the visible tzitzit, the fringes from his prayer garments. While on tour, he continues to keep kosher and doesn't perform on the Sabbath. His music is still an outgrowth of his spirituality, but his lyrics are less religiously overt. He put together his new CD, Light, after 2 years of studying the writings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, an influential 18th century Hasidic sage. Matityahu says all the lyrics on the CD are infused with ideas taken from Nachman's stories. The CD's theme of light is taken from Jewish mysticism and the Kabbalah teaching that when God created the world, he withdrew the light from the center of his being.
And then he created this sort of void, or this sort of like empty space within. And then the worlds basically exist inside of that empty space. And the light is surrounding it, like on the outside. The idea is not to totally get lost in that darkness, but to be like rooted in it. With the sense that there's, like, above all of it is this sort of surrounding light.
Despite the mystical illusions, Matityahu tries to make his music accessible to a mainstream audience. NBC is featuring his hit single, One Day, an anthem of hope and peace, in its ad campaign for the upcoming Winter Olympics. Matityahu says music remains a profoundly spiritual experience for him, and that's what he tries to create for others.
I see like the potential to continue to grow so much, to try to create this experience that people can really tap into something authentic, whether it's a deep place within themselves or whether it's God, something bigger than themselves.
I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
In other news, almost half of Americans say they've had a spiritual or mystical experience, and many say they've felt supernatural phenomena, according to a new poll. The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life found that 49% of Americans reported having had a moment of sudden religious insight or awakening, 29% say they've been in touch with a dead person, 18% say they've felt the presence of a ghost. And now a Christmas story, not about the crowds enjoying the holidays, but about those, many of them in mourning, for whom this time of year is especially painful. For them, some churches are offering special Blue Christmas services. Deborah Potter reports from Richmond, Virginia.
Everywhere you look, it's happy holiday time. And despite the bad economy, shoppers are still buying. After all, it's the most wonderful time of the year, as that old Christmas song puts it, with everyone telling you, be of good cheer. But for some people, the season is not merry and bright. For Kate O'Dwyer Randall, Christmas is a time for missing her brother Jim, who died of a sudden heart attack 5 years ago at the age of 37.
If you're grieving, there's always the sense that there's a chair there that's empty, that the person that was here once last year is no longer here. It's personal, and it's private, and it's very pronounced.
But Randall does not grieve alone. On this day in early December, a small group gathers for a special service at Cannon Memorial Chapel on the campus of the University of Richmond, where Randall is associate chaplain.
Friends, welcome to Blue Christmas. We're so glad that you've joined us, and we're so sorry for the reasons that you have.
Susie Reed came to mourn the death of her brother Billy just 6 weeks ago.
I thought this would be a good way to kind of accept that the holidays are here and that we're going to have them, you know, without Billy this year. And just be with other people who are also, you know, that understand, you know, that sometimes the holidays are not happy.
I'm not really a singer, but I thought I would share what's in my heart.
Carnesha Jones is mourning the death of her mother.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, a long, long way from home.
Others have brought their own private pain to the service, one of hundreds being held in churches across the country this month for people facing the holidays with a heavy heart.
People can be honest about that grief, so they don't have to go and sing jingle bells. They can actually come and cry with other people who are grieving. The church is going to say, we're not going to give you a platitude. We're going to say to you, this is hard, and God is in the midst of this. And this is hard, all at the same time.
The interfaith service is quiet and simple. There are no scripture readings, just personal stories and poems.
My God, you call to me. In the silence, do not be afraid. I am with you. And I answer, behind tears, I'm trying. Stay near.
We feel, particularly in this season, that grief is permanent and hope is fleeting. But I encourage you and remind you today that it's actually the other way around.
Randall invites everyone to light a candle, put a name to their grief, and join in saying the names together.
Stay in your seats if you'd like. Think, reflect, and pray. But for those that choose to come forward, your brave statement will be met with the congregants repeating it.
I light this for my friend Patrick.
Patrick.
For Valerie.
This is for my mom, Addie.
I light this candle for my brother, Billy.
For 4 years, Billy Reed battled cancer with his sister by his side. The loss has hit her hard.
I never thought about how true it is that people, I think they think that they're going to upset you if they mention, you know, the person's name that's passed away. But it doesn't. I'd like to hear it. I want to talk about him like he's, you know, still around, like he's still important, you know. And not talking about him and not saying his name emphasizes his absence. Lighting a candle in a church, you know, it's just very meaningful. And I know he watched me do it. So.
Something happens in this service. I don't know if it's being with other people who are grieving or being able to say the name out loud, but something happens in this service every year and people are so touched and moved. I know it helps healing. I know it helps.
As the service ends, the candles burn on.
We thank you for the lives of those that we've named today. Let us be people of faith and hope, always and often.
There may not be joy this season for many here, but today there is comfort. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Richmond, Virginia.
We have a belief and practice segment today on going into the wilderness to experience the presence of God. John Leyenberger is a former atheist who had a profound religious experience on a wilderness trip. Now an ordained United Church of Christ minister, Leyenberger leads others looking for their own experience of the holy. Leyenberger is the author of Renewal in the Wilderness. He lives in Evanston, Illinois. Earlier this fall, I asked him what happens to the people he takes to the wilderness.
What they encounter in the wilderness is getting away from all of the things in society that we call trappings that are meant to be good things, but that keep them away from a more authentic and deeper relationship with God.
Leyenberger's trips begin with his coaching.
Don't rock the canoe. These things will tip over. They're very stable, but they will tip over. I think what happens for them is they get to the transcendent through the physical, the act of canoeing, the act of setting up camp. I like to say it strips them of the barnacles that they accrue throughout their lives in society. And they begin to realize how little they need to be profoundly happy. They are able to simplify. And in that simplification, they get a sense of something holy about what surrounds them. It's a sense of well-being and a sense of being cared for and a sense of profound peace. And it's kind of a hackneyed phrase, be in the moment. But there's something so powerful about it because that is the moment in the very present is when God comes to us. It is much easier, I think, for God to get through our defenses when we're in a wilderness.
I asked Leyenberger to recall the conversion experience he had when he was alone on skis on a frozen lake in winter.
It was getting dark, and the trees were etched against the skyline in kind of a blackness while the skyline was turning purple. I just looked up at the sky and put my arms out like this with the poles dangling from my wrists and arched my back, and at that moment, I felt like I was in the midst of a warm stream of water that felt so pure and so refreshing and so cleansing and so friendly and so loving. And then it kept coming into my mind slowly at first and very dimly at first, but it said, it's God. Sometimes there are those wonderful explosive moments of experiencing God, but most of the time it's very, very subtle. It's just the small things that people ignore that being out in an environment like that brings them to an awareness of. It reminds us of who we are not, and who God is.
Back home, Leyenberger tries to recapture some of the wilderness experience in a park near his house, and he says all people can do that.
I suggest to them that they have an open heart and a willingness to be surprised. And they do it very consciously. It is part of being here now. It's part of what the wilderness teaches you.
I asked Leyenberger whether some people come on his trips and have no sense of anything holy.
In the 8 years I've been doing this, and maybe the 400 people that I've taken to the wilderness, I only know of one man who was not really touched by his experience in some way, who said at the end, I had a good time, but I got no spiritual insight, no spiritual awakenings, nothing like that. And that's not a bad batting average, 1 out of 400. I'll take that.
On our calendar, Catholics take note, Christmas will come earlier this year, at least at the Vatican. Officials have announced that Pope Benedict will celebrate the traditional Christmas Eve midnight mass at St. Peter's Basilica, not at the usual midnight hour, but at 10 p.m. The Vatican says the 82-year-old pontiff would like to get to bed earlier that night so he can be rested for all the activities on Christmas Day. And Jews around the world began celebrating Hanukkah, the 8-day festival of lights. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. We have much more on our website, including more of Kim Lawton's interview with Matisyahu, and you can hear two songs that are not on any of his albums. You'll also find a link to John Leyenberger's Renewal in the Wilderness website. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more music from Matisyahu.
We don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more war. And our children will pay.